Welcome to Contagious Podcast, Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. I'm so excited to share with you the conversation that we had over on Clubhouse today. This is part of a six-part series focused on NADA 2021 and the inability for us to gather personally. So what we wanted to do is create a platform and a space for us to connect as personally as possible. Some incredible panelists, people in our industry that are pushing forward with innovation. Hope that you're encouraged by the conversation today. Just as a note, if you're not familiar with Clubhouse, it's an open forum platform where panelists, speakers, and audience members are all involved in the conversation. So you'll hear potential of some people talking through each other or questions being asked by those audience members, and hope that you are encouraged by the messages and the innovation and the thoughts that are shared today. So without further ado, let's head over to the broadcast. All right, let's go ahead and kick this off. We're waiting on a couple moderators, but they will come in soon. Again, this is NADA, Dreaming of the Future, hosted by Contagious Podcast. I am Kyle Mountseer, host of Contagious Podcast and Marketing and Business Development Director with Nelson Auto Group. Super excited. This is the fourth of six in the series that we're doing, all just centered around the fact that NADA is going on this week and we're all mad that we can't be there. And so we want to increase the personal connection. So what we're going to do, the way this format is going to work, we've got a bunch of incredible moderators up here that love to dream, but also love to get really practical. So I put the topic of dreaming, but I think there's going to be a lot of practicality going on in this room today. So what we're going to do is we'll start with them. I've got a couple questions for each of them just to launch the room. One really goofy, hopefully, that might give you an insight into their life, and then one more particularly in automotive. And then we'll open up that hand raising. We'll let you guys come up and we'll make sure and answer questions, get feedback on some of those things, and join the conversation, because we need more people talking in automotive about innovating, because we're all leaders and we're gonna grow this together. So without further ado, I'll introduce each one of our moderators. We're gonna ask these two questions. One, where do you go to get your coffee, and when you drink it, how do you drink it? And if you don't drink coffee, why not? Second, when you think about dreaming of the future, and we're not talking about flying cars or anything, what's the one question that as an industry we need to be asking on a regular basis? What's the question that you think that we need to ask of ourselves? Not the one thing that we need to do, but the question that we need to be asking in order to then go down the right path. So we're going to start with Ben, because he's first on my list. Ben Hadley is the head of emerging product at Dealer Inspire and has spent years in the industry, both on the dealer side and vendor side, and is a great friend of mine. Ben, roll on.
Yo. All right. So coffee, I noticed there's a couple fellow Vermonters in the crowd, and this is going to be like sacrilege for my state. I drink instant coffee.
No.
It's bad, man. I drink it black, quick to the point. It's the Trader Joe's one. It's Colombian. I don't know if that makes it any better. But that is the brutal truth of my coffee, and I do it every single day, and then, you know, haven't looked back since. It's actually delicious. If you try the Trader Joe, before you hate on me, try the Trader Joe's instant Colombian coffee, and then you can make fun of me after. The question I think we need to be asking the industry, or we need all constantly ask ourselves, I think circulates around lifetime value. So in my head, we've spent a lot of the last few years wondering what kind of marketing works, what kind of marketing doesn't. And I think we're starting to veer into what audience works and what audience doesn't. And I think the future, though, starts looking at, okay, what audience has the best lifetime value for a dealer? And I think the easiest way to illustrate that is, you know, a customer that's likely to do service with me and likely to create a lifetime relationship with me and buy multiple cars. Obviously has more value to the dealer than one that maybe is 2 hours away and just wanted a really good deal. And I think that also applies, lifetime value also applies on the vendor side, where, this growth for growth's sake idea really should start veering more towards the right partners working together for a lifetime.
Perfect. Thanks. Awesome. We'll I've got that written down, and we may circle back there. The next mod that we have up here, and second on mine, is Paul Daly. Paul has become a friend through Drew Delaware's Coffee Talks. And if you're not involved in that and you are a marketer, see LinkedIn to get involved in that. But Paul is the CEO and brand of Congruent, and also most recently a brand instructor for Simon Sinek himself, and is driving some of those online classes, and also the host of Clarity Compressed. And I also love his Automotive State of the Union, and I'll go ahead and plug his Friday room that he's having this week. It's always an insightful room. But Paul, take us away.
Yes. Couldn't help it. I had a good one. Kyle, love what you're doing with the room, and I love the initiative you've taken. It's been great to just get to know you a little bit. Get right to your question, because we have a lot of people in here. What is the coffee? Where do I get my coffee? I prefer to make my own coffee, kind of the opposite of Ben. I was partner in a coffee business. We built a hybrid powered coffee truck, and so I learned all about roasting and beans, and I became a snob. So I like fresh ground beans from Brazil. They have to be less than 2 weeks old. I grind them. I make them French press style every day. I have a kettle that heats the water to 205 degrees. Total snob. So, but I'm not judging.
Paul, do you want to trade? I'll trade you some.
Never. 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 But I would love to make you coffee, Ben. You'll never go back. But I'm not judging, because, like, hey, coffee can be a very functional part of people's day. So the question we need to be asking, I mean, it's a little bit higher, you know, elevation than like tactical, but it really, I think constantly in this environment where things are constantly changing, I think the question we always need to be asking, like, what needs to be blown up and what needs to be kept? It's easy to get addicted to chasing like a latest innovation or a latest widget, just because, you know, the trend is going that way, and kind of in this world where, you know, Dogecoin can come out and have value all of a sudden, or GameStop, and all, you know, where trends and, you know, popularity is making a lot of people take a lot of actions. Like, that is kind of becoming pervasive in our culture. And in the auto industry, I think there are a lot of elements to the auto industry that are worth not destroying and keeping. So the question we should be asking is, what really needs to be deconstructed and what needs to be kept and developed?
Love it. Yeah, I think that that's a great question to ask. The blown up scares a lot of people, I think. For next, Doug is the chief revenue officer at cars.com. I've gotten the pleasure to be in a couple rooms with him on Clubhouse, and Paul recommended bring him in this, and I think that's a great call. So I'm excited to have you, and excited to hear where your thoughts are today. So take it away, Doug.
I need a music intro pause, so you're gonna have to work on that in the background. But thank you, Kyle, for having me. And look, I live in Seattle, so I don't know that I can top Paul for like every 2 weeks, but we're pretty snobby out here too. We have a local roaster, Ladro. I drink their Diablo coffee. That's my favorite, and there are probably two or three others, but that's my coffee go-to. Since we're all at home now, I guess I'm grinding and making it myself these days, but that would also be the place I'd go to if you come to Seattle. You should go to Lodman. On the question we should be asking ourselves, it's similar to Paul's, like, how do we disrupt ourselves? You know, we'll get into the automotive space, but as a point of perspective, I spend a lot of time in some other segments, and I think we should look around and see what those other segments can teach us about the future of retail. You know, I was in travel for a long time. I was in entertainment for a long time. I was one of the first 10 people at the formation of Ticketmaster Online. And I think there were some stories there that are instructive, because that was a business that was entirely box offices and bricks and mortar and retail. And some of you will remember retail ticketing centers inside of grocery stores. And that there was a whole generation in that old guard that believed, well, we'll always have retail ticket centers and grocery stores, and we will always send the tickets in the mail. You know, we will always sell tickets by phone. And none of that was true just a few years on. Fan experiences and in-venue experiences were transformed, but they were transformed in a way that is also instructive for us here. When Cirque du Soleil came along and said that they wanted to sell tickets that you could only print at home, that was a huge amount of process change, right? Like for Madison Square Garden, it changed the process so that you couldn't take a Xerox copy of a ticket and go in the other gate at the exact same moment was a massive process. People change. And I think we're going through a lot of that same kind of behind the scenes operational change in order to make really big and profound improvements to our customer experience. So I think, we have to ask what we should disrupt, as Paul pointed out, and we should take lessons from other market segments where we can.
You said Seattle, right, Doug?
Yeah, Seattle.
Well, in that case,
well done.
Right, it only has 1 billion listens on Spotify.
Paul, I'm bringing you to every room. You better be in every room, and you have to have background music. Like that's going
to
be the new thing for every single person.
Don't have to run the room. I'm just going to curate soundtracks from that one. Okay, Michael, I know where you're from. Hold on. I'm just kidding.
Wait, you got to do it as I'm prepping his intro, right? That's what I'll try.
Do not do fish for me, please.
Oh, no.
Just because I'm from Vermont, please.
See, I didn't know that. I was going to do, I can't get that Bernie Sanders picture of him on the chair or I would do that somehow.
Oh, no. All right. So next we have my man, Michael Cirillo. And Cirillo is the newfound owner of the coolest guitar pick in the world. I found that out on Instagram Live last night. But other than that, he is also the host of a well-famed podcast that is by the same name of his company that he is a CEO of, and has helped so many dealers thrive, so many small businesses thrive, has books, and he's a keynote speaker, and I could go on and on, but I'm so honored to have you in the room, Mr. Michael Cirillo. What do you got for us?
Hey, my man, love what you're doing here. Hello to everybody that's joining us today. I was expecting like "Oh Canada" to play or something, Paul. You you wouldn't have gotten a copyright claim.
Oh no!
All right, so
that's a mic drop.
Oh man, come on!
I did you dirty like that. I'm sorry.
You did. Hey, but the saving grace is you played Nirvana. Dave Grohl started the Foo Fighters and stole Alanis Morissette's drummer Taylor Hawkins. So I will at least take that.
He's one of my favorites.
I will at least take that. So, dude, thanks for the intro. I might lose half of my podcast listenership by admitting that I have never had a sip of coffee before in my entire life. And the reason why, because you asked why not, it just wasn't part of our family culture, man. Like my parents didn't drink coffee. I didn't drink coffee, so I don't drink coffee. Though there is a famed Canadian candy bar called a Coffee Crisp, and I have tasted that. So if that tastes anything, I don't know, maybe it doesn't, I don't know.
How do you spell coffee?
With your hands.
Oh, wow. There it is.
Yes, I do have kids, and there's your dad joke for the day. The question, I love this question. I would say, and this is maybe along a similar vein of what Paul was bringing up, I think to the future, kind of looking back to today, and one of the things that kind of freaks me out is, 5 years from now, will we be asking, why were we so afraid to make a stand to challenge the OEM current way of doing things? And why did we feel like we needed to be stuck in that model? And more importantly, like, did we take the time to map that to our definition of success? Like, do we know what our definition of success is? Do we know what we really want? Do we know what matters most to us so that we can have focus and clarity? And I guess more importantly to that is when. So there's the why, but then there's the when. If we know that we're kind of pigeonholed into a model that doesn't really work for us, and we know that there's a negative stigma that the media keeps perpetuating about us, when are we going to take the actions that map to our definition of success? And more importantly, what I call the platinum rule, which is, you've heard the golden rule, which is to treat others the way you'd want to be treated. But we've been pontificating way too long over the platinum rule, which is to treat others the way they want to be treated. We talk a lot about the customer experience. So I'm kind of action-based here. Like, what can we do today? What will we do today that maps to treating customers the way that they want to be treated? And not, you know, and start standing up and saying, no, we need to blow some crap up. We need to figure out what we can, you know, get rid of here so that we can move forward in a very strategic, service-minded and service-oriented way.
Absolutely stellar questions. And I think one of those may be our launch pad here in just a second, depending on what Mr. Brian Kramer has. Brian, I've gotten to know through Clubhouse primarily. He is the general manager at Germaine Toyota of Naples, and someone that is constantly pushing our industry to better heights, and not just our industry, but specifically his people and his dealership. And what I love about Brian is he is someone that loves to ask questions. He's not afraid to ask questions and not be the one in the room with all the answers. And it actually provides everybody in the room with greater insight. And so I'm super excited to have Brian on the panel today. And Brian, take it away. Paul might have your music.
Well, I'll tell you what, I drink. So I'm originally from Chicago.
Brian.
So, you know, Mike, the my favorite Canadian band is Crash Test Dummies, just for the record.
Whoa, Superman.
Dude, you just right? leveled up.
So, what I drink, and especially here recently to keep up with you, Kyle, because I don't know how you do this and what you do during the day all the time, but I drink a Trenta cold brew from Starbucks with three shots in the morning, and that's the deal. But in terms of what I would say, well, at my age, that's what you got to do to keep up with the young guys. So what I would say about the business is everything that we do, I think that Apple's going to get in the business here at some point. And then you've got, you know, obviously the overused Carvana and Brooms of the world, that everything that we do has to be impactful, and it has to, you know, benefit the customer and not just us, but it also has to put us in position so that 3 years from now, when those guys enter the market, that we're ready. And it gets us closer to that than it does to anything else. And anything else that doesn't is a distraction, and it's just as important to what you do as what you don't do.
Amazing. Thanks for that, Brian. So let's launch into conversation. And as this conversation goes on, I'm going to hand off the mic to the powerful people, these five people. And then as that happens, I'll turn on hand raising, and we'll let some people up and come speak and ask questions of the panelists. We've got four people that are from kind of vendor agency side right now, two of us that are in the dealership real time. And there's some incredible people in the audience that I'm sure have questions and comments along these lines. But this is what I want to ask. I want to ask, I was in a room on Clubhouse, and someone was kind of saying, you know, we need to be like, you know, what's your 3 years out? How far out are we on all these changes that we need to do? And the title of this room is Dreaming of the Future. But I would contend, and I think a lot of you all would contend, that the future is now. And what Brian just said is that how are we ready for 3 years from now, which means we need to start making changes right now. And then Doug said that it takes a huge process change, like a massive overhaul of our current processes. Paul said it has blown up. And Michael said, why are we going to do it? Why are we going to do it right now in this current state? And then, and I think the answer is now, but why are we going to do it, and how are we going to do it? So If anyone wants to take that, I'll open that up to the speakers. Just go ahead and unmute. And again, during this, I'll hand raise. But y'all just go to town on that idea, if you may.
Yeah, I'll jump in, Cal. You know, I on the horizon, I think it is on, you know, right here. And you know, from where we sit, the consumer is going to shape the future of the automotive franchise. Yeah, we're going to have to create irresistible experiences through the eyes of that consumer, right? And the you know, what we see at 25 million uniques come to our site each month, you know, they tell us a lot about what they're looking for. I do think that the future is local and online and offline both, right? It's foolhardy for us not to disrupt our own processes and retail experiences and move really aggressively toward digital. But it's also equally foolhardy for us to believe that consumers don't want an in-person retail experience at all. Like that, you know, that I think that's nonsense. So I think from our own research, even just recently, you know, we were seeing as high as 42% of our customers were when surveyed said that they were interested in digital retail type experiences, filling out paperwork and finance online before, but then that dropped as we surveyed into November. So it's going to fluctuate around, and I think we have to be going hard at our digital experience and creating a kind of seamless online to offline experience, which is easy to talk about, and I know it's been talked about in a bunch of rooms. It's just, and it's harder to execute. But that, you know, the time is now to make those investments.
What do you think it's going to take to execute it? Because we've talked about it a lot. What do you think it will take to execute it? From especially from the dealer side.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are some simple things. Like even right now, we've helped a lot of dealers to just mention to their customers that they will do home delivery. Right, something as simple as that is already arguably a process that most dealers have and are capable of doing. We just have to merchandise it more, and we had 2 million of our 4 million listings or so, you know, in the last month that had home delivery badges on them, and no surprise that those with home delivery badges were getting more engagement from customers. So there's some sort of simple things that right now we can do to say, yes, we recognize that you, the customer, wants a different type of experience, and we're ready to meet you where you are. Another example, I think, is the salespeople that are the people in the dealerships, at least the ones that, you know, that I meet, are so incredible. And there's some that are like super like TikTok savvy and way digital first mindset. And I think we have to let them be the heroes, and, you know, let them stand out. Our Salesperson Connect stuff shows off those sellers on dealership pages, and when we do, you know, no surprise, those leads convert more when they are able to connect with a salesperson specifically. So I think there are a couple things in the near term about letting our digital savvy workforce be digital savvy and relinquish some control to them to drive that and just make sure we're merchandising what we already do in the industry better. There's other harder stuff on data and unpacking it out of 18 different systems and silos that will make us better around the corner. But those are some near-term things.
Well, let's sprinkle this in. I think it's interesting. I learned yesterday, so Gen Z, it's like, as a millennial, I'm so happy there's another generation we're finally going to just start talking a lot about. Gen Z is going to have an equal amount of pure digital friendships to physical friendships. So the average Gen Z person
will have, 50% of their friends that they've never met physically, that they met through Twitch, Discord, Reddit, you know, online, some ecosystem. And then they'll have another 50% that they've met physically. And I think if that is the future, that's the future car buyer, that's the future employee at a dealership, then the onus is on us to really learn, this is a people business, but to figure out how to facilitate and build relationships completely digital, like we're doing right now. This is like a new tool set that we all have to get really, really honed in on.
I'd like to chime in on that as well. I love what Ben just said. He said my favorite phrase, which is to build relationships of trust. Go with me for a second here. I think that the best online relationship has to start offline. So go with me for a minute here. What I mean by that is there's no way you're going to know what it takes to build a relationship with somebody online if the people that you are trusting to build that relationship with hate your guts and hate their job. And so this sounds like a really far-fetched, you know, cloud nine. We're sitting up in the clouds now with the Philadelphia cream cheese lady. But like the reality of it is culture is not a pie in the sky thing. The Achilles heel of companies like Vroom or Your Store or Carvana or any of our companies for that matter, the Achilles heel is having people that are just showing up because it's a J-O-B and they are there to collect their paycheck. And so to build this relationship, even to Ben's point about building relationships and Gen Z and how they're gonna have, you know, a pure kind of one-to-one of offline and online relationships, the key to it all is to remember that we're not building a relationship with computers. We're building a relationship with real people, and the medium by which we are building that relationship is digital. But we still need to be bought in. We still need to have a servant's heart. We still need to know what it means to give value to somebody, to act on promptings to provide service to somebody in maybe a way that has no mapping to what we do for a living. A great example of that is Ali Retta. When you listen to that guy speak about his process, he is in his community building relationships. He is serving people in his community, not just in a volunteer way, but maybe back in the days when we could go to restaurants, he was ducking into the kitchen to see if his favorite chef was there to say, hey, I left you something. I left you a little note. I left you a little treat. I left you a little, like he's building relationships. And I think as long as, you know, sometimes we can think about digital in a way that, gosh, like it seems kind of grim where in the future, we're all just going to be sitting in these, you know, custom built computer, tailor-made computer chairs, like hooked into the matrix. And we're never going to have to leave our houses or anything like that. But tying in what Ben and Doug have just talked about, like building relationships with people in a fashion that will enhance lifetime value. Like I am inspired by dealers to this day who understand the importance of creating an environment that people can grow and thrive and how that actually transcends the four walls of the business or now the digital walls of the business, because they are encircled by people who are showing up to innovate and give their best. And so, you know, when I think of the future, I think a lot of the success of any industry is still going to be predicated upon how well we can think beyond ourselves and serve others, whether it's Gen Z or millennial or whatever, and how that translates to lifetime value. As leaders, it is our responsibility to create an environment by which the people that come into that environment can be nurtured and grow and thrive and feel empowered. And that's something that I've been blessed with, right? Like I've got a team of people that I love, who I trust, who are showing up each day to give their best. And that translates to growth. That translates to relationships. And so I think that's a really important piece that we need to think about as we look to the future. Because we keep looking to tools, we keep looking to, you know, Paul said it, widgets and doodads and shiny objects, and we keep looking to algorithms, but you know, there's no easy way to say it and there's no easy way to do it, but it is relationships with real people over algorithms every day of the week. That's where we need to be focused. And so then we need to map our actions to what does it take to build a great relationship of trust. And the reality of it is, we all know what it takes. We all know what it takes. Sometimes we're just not willing to do it, or maybe we're blind to it because, you know, for the last 25 years, we've been sold doodads, widgets, and things that promise to lasso the sun, the moon, and the stars for us without any intervention on our part. And we just, we know by 2021, that's just not the case.
That's going to take me a minute to digest. That was a lot of meat right there.
Nom, 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 nom.
but really, really true. You know, even pivoting all the way back to what Ben said, you know, there's a new generation, Gen Z. There's actually two new generations. There's Generation Alpha now. You know, I have a 15-month-old who's going to be like the first year of Generation Alpha. So you got two backing up. And I have, you know, for anyone in here that has kids that are teenagers, it's how true. So I have a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old, so I'm close enough, and even my 9-year-old. But the reality of this generation building relationships and meaningful friendships online, or like, you know, in their virtual schools and on Discord and, you know, in the games that they play, that's real. And then, like, to move that forward onto Michael's point, like how meaningful relationship can in many ways be built with them with less friction than it took before, when we needed to like see people in person and when we needed to, you know, really have a physical touch point with them. And going, bringing all that together, package up into what Michael's saying about like, how do we start internally to cultivate our people and our culture to be oriented toward building relationships in whichever form it takes. You know, as Doug was talking, I was thinking about, I've never thought of this in relation to the auto industry before, but the first company that came to mind that did something really differently digitally and bridged kind of this retail, digital retail, which used to be a physical thing in person, was Zappos. And I never thought of this parallel before, but Zappos was something no one could imagine ever buying shoes that are very, you know, very particular how a shoe fits, how it feels, how it looks when it's on your feet. And they, you know, they worked out the details, the shipping logistics, taking the fear out of buying it and not wanting it. But what they paired that with was a level of personal connection via their customer service on the phone, where they did something no other company did before, and they were really human about the way they treated people, or didn't make them feel guilty about having to send something back. Or, you know, they have all these legendary stories about, you know, you could call Zappos customer service and they would help you with literally anything you ask. You know, people would be like, I need a pizza ordered, and they would do it. But I think they were just really good at, you know, forging connections in any, whatever, you know, way, shape, or form it took. And that did start with their internal culture of, you know, showing their team and their people that like, hey, we want to make people feel good about being connected. We want them to feel good about being a person. We want them to make, and then they will feel good about buying shoes from us. And so that whole trail, like, that's just how my mind put it together from what we started with Doug, then to Ben, then to Michael.
Yeah, I think the level of personal connection that we can commit to this is going to be really key, because that's the one unique piece that we have that these online retailers that are coming out, and I'll, you know, CarMax has that too, but as these online retailers, as Apple comes into the market, and Apple's going about it the smart way, I think, you know, getting in line with Kia and Hyundai, and because they realize that there's an element of the personal connection, there's an element of going to the Apple store that makes a whole lot of sense for people. And I think that that's going to be a game changer for us in our industry, that if we get that culture piece right, then we're going to get a lot more down the line right. You know, obviously, we've talked ad nauseum about digital retailing and again, all of the tech and software that's coming in, but it's become, you know, completely like it's almost mind numbing for our employees and ourselves to try and figure out all of these little pieces that we got to stack together. And we still haven't figured out our people piece.
Not to mention, Kyle, it, you know, to what you're saying right now, it's as a software guy, it actually scares the crap out of me thinking about how much some of the vendors are investing right now to build out these digital retail tools. And then how that's going to be received by the target audience, by the dealers, where there are going to be where this could actually, because we're talking about the future, and we should get to the dreams, but this feels a little bit like a nightmare. So Paul, you might have to talk me off the ledge here. This could be a kiss of death, because they're going to roll out these digital retail tools because it does in fact solve an issue. But if we don't tackle the relationship piece, the human piece, and understand where to, like, where we can tie that in appropriately, like where the customer would expect the human piece to enter into that mix, there's going to be a whole lot of people dealing with robots and freaked out about a purchase that because they don't know who to get a hold of. There's going to be no face to it. It's going to all be chat bots or like whatever. And that could be the kiss of death, in that we just pawned off the most important piece of this whole experience to robots. And we need to be cautious of that. So maybe, you know, digital retail solves an issue and it pushes back like where the human piece comes into it. But we need to understand first and foremost that there still needs to be that human piece. And it scares me. It scares me right now, because think of what the craze was over the last year, two, 3 years.
Really?
It was chat bots. Like, think about it. Yeah, this is going to solve a problem for us. What are you going to do? You're going to install a robot. And the robot is going to try and handle everything, you know, quote unquote, intelligently. And ultimately, like, if you look at a lot of those chat transcripts, most of the people are like, when can I talk to a real person? Like, I have a question that requires the muscle between the ears. And then it never happens. And that's putting a bad taste in people's mouths. So, like, I hope I'm, like, putting enough stress on the whole relationship piece. Because as long as human beings exist on this planet, we are going to long for and thrive on human-to-human connection.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, like, Ben and Paul and Brian are trying to unmute and get there. Just, I want to reset. We're launching off NADA. We're dreaming of the future, but the future seems to be now, and there's some change management that has to happen within our industry. This room is being recorded, but we'd love to have other speakers come up. So you can hit that little hand and raise your hand and come up and ask questions of the panel, join the conversation. This is what Clubhouse is really cool, because you've got Ben, Paul, Doug, Michael, Brian right in front of you, and you got the opportunity to potentially ask questions, join the conversation. So don't hesitate, get in, let's go. Brian had his mic unmuted last time, so I'm gonna give it to him, and then Ben and Paul, you'll have to fight.
I would say I agree with Michael wholeheartedly. But I think before you get that, before you get the associates that have the human element, you got to provide the clarity as a leader of what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it. And you've got to build that with analog trust to the associates, digital trust online, so that your marketing on remote deliveries, remote appraisals, or we'll buy your car even if you don't buy one from us, that the managers are also bought into that. Because a lot of times we go so fast and we don't ask everybody if there's any holes in it. So we think it's great to launch the marketing piece, but then the execution and the operation aspect, when they come in, we haven't clarified that. So then it just short circuits and people get more frustrated with it because we're going so fast. I mean, I believe in the bicycle theory, that as long as you keep going, you know, even if you're not going the right direction, at least just stay upright. You got to stay in motion and just keep on, because you're going to make mistakes and you're going to hit bumps in the road. But there's got to be a certain amount of clarity, and then you've got to live it. I mean, this true team buy-in is getting the right chemistry with your team is more important than the right ideas. And trust, analog, digital, is just doing what we say we're going to do. Because when we advertise something or we have a process and then we don't do it, we're telling our staff what we're okay with. And with remote sales, remote appraisals, if we budge on that or streamline F&I checkout and express pay and all the things that go along with that, you just got to make sure you're sending the same message to your team as you are to your customers.
You know, I've seen, and a lot of the dealers and vendors in this room will probably relate to this, but I've seen stores, and I guess maybe this is pre-pandemic stores, so I haven't seen any in the last 12 months just because I haven't been around as much, but see stores who have done everything from a technology standpoint, just about everything the wrong way, and still be very successful. And that would always frustrate me, because, you know, I'd like to think in progressive means and I want to move forward. But I realize, as Brian is saying that, the value of an involved leader with their people actually is, and I mean, now principally speaking, it makes sense, but can make a massive, massive difference on the result and the outcome, you know, regardless of whether or not they're using any of the right digital tools. So, I mean, obviously, that's the bottom line, is what Brian was saying, is that you need a leader that's being willing to lean in and be involved. And then when you stack on top of that, paying attention to your team and your people and cultivating that mentality of serving others, and stacking on top of that, good processes, procedures, stacking on top of that, good analytics and data and marketing, and then stacking on top of that, the front-facing tools and checkouts and all the things that smooth. But it's like, when you follow that procedure, it's unstoppable. But, you know, a lot of the time it's easy to try to cut corners because of the shiny object. So Brian, I guess I'm not surprised that answer came from you, but as you're saying that too, realizing that the depth of leadership is still is going to be what makes the difference long term.
Yeah, I'll add in, like, if you go to Brian, you go to his store, and just Brian as an individual, his say and do ratio is 1-to-1. Like, it matches right up. Like, on the website, they say they're going to give you a fast, easy, transparent buying experience. Then they do a fast, easy, transparent buying process. And so I think the say-do ratio is actually, like, probably the most key piece here, because, yeah, that's like the internal buy-in part. But, you know, if you're thinking about doing digital retailing as an example, you have all the components you need to do it right now. I know you have a finance app. I know you have a trade-in app. And I know you could just build a process around the existing functionality that you have. And I also know that if you did that, then when you finally came to an evaluation point of tech, your salespeople would give you really great feedback and tell you, I'm feeling the relief from this new tech. As opposed to the normal dealer out there is really just, oh, my 20 group said I should get this, or I heard I should get this, or this is the new hot wave. I'm gonna get it, and then I make the process after. And your salespeople, in this specific moment, when we have fooled ourselves into thinking digital retailing is a marketing product, but it's really an operations product, now it becomes so crucial to have that internal buy-in. You won't have it. And the stakeholders are gonna just, like, you scream bloody mercy, and you'll cancel it and you'll buy another one because you go, ah, that didn't work. And it's a rinse and repeat. So I think, like, that mode of take what I currently have, build it. I mean, can you imagine how many people would appreciate SEO as an example? If in like 2006, we all tried to like edit snippets and schema.org tagging, like we'd all go, oh my God, thank God there's an SEO guy. But instead we kind of just said, okay, like someone else should do that and we'll give up control.
And Ben, I think you're dead on. And the tempting thing, and I did it for a long time, was you start with the technology, and that should be the very last thing that you tackle on the whole deal. I mean, it's got to be clarity of purpose, clarity of expectations, you know, the right vision, you know, non-negotiables, you know, attacking friction points with the team. You know, we've got some team members on this call. Josh James is down there. Once they're bought in, it takes off like a flywheel, because I don't even, you know, they're taking it to a point where I never even thought they could, especially at this point, because they're bought in and they've got better ideas than I do in most cases, and they execute better. And now it's on them and they're just rewriting it. But none of that, the technology doesn't work unless the first part is done. And I should have actually postponed the technology even further, because there were some other things that weren't clear. And I know everybody's probably attacking the technology to begin with, but that should be one of the final pieces in the puzzle.
Yeah, I think I even made the mistake at our group that, like, 3 years ago, I was like, oh, that's pretty, let's put it in, boom. And then we, we look back and it's like, whoa, we just added a whole bunch of stuff that we didn't, you know, need to add, and now we're convoluted and we can't actually clearly communicate, and we didn't take care of the customer and all of that, and so we missed the whole process piece. And so we're having to go back and, you know, Paul said blow up, like we're having to blow up our tech stack so that we can get back to the roots of what it looks like to communicate with customers. I think that's a big piece of our misstep and the sexy DR. I mean, I think Paul said it, like there's people that are doing incredible business and don't have DR on their website yet. There's people doing incredible business with DR on their website, but they created a process around it, marketed it, drove it downstream, made personal connections through it. And that's what it takes. So I'm interested, you know, Josh and Jared are both on Brian's team. I'm interested to hear kind of the real on what Brian's talking about from a leadership level and how that gets executed in the team. If either of you guys are willing to share some of this as you've been listening.
So to kind of like sum that up, really, it's going to come down to what Brian always told me. You can't bake a cake that takes 30 minutes and 15 by turning up the heat. Right. So you're going to have to get those bases going before you're actually going to build upon it. And really, it comes down, like in our dealership, everyone being on the same page, is it's going to be like a lateral call out. Right. So Brian's going to put something into place, say this is how it's going to go. And if for whatever reason he were to slip up on it, he's going to expect that we're going to call him out. He's going to call us out. We're going to call each other out on everything to hold everyone accountable. And that's going to cross the sales floor as well, giving them the empowerment to call out us, to call out each other, and kind of build as a team. So when you're building it from the bottom and looking at that culture and what everything needs to look like, and having everyone in the same direction, I think that's a huge part of it, is making sure everyone's involved, keeping everyone in check.
Yeah, that's awesome. We just had a whole bunch of people join in the room. We're talking about dreaming of the future, how the future may be now. We've talked a lot about what we need to blow up. What are we defining as success? How are we going to be ready for 3 years from now, instead of thinking, what are we going to change in 3 years? And talked around that. And then there's been a lot around the culture piece and how culture is so important prior to getting to the tech that we need or the processes that we need to change and blow up. So if you are in the room, we've brought a few people up. If you're up on stage, we want to have this conversation. A couple of the moderators have said, hey, we've kind of spoken our piece and have those ideas. So if you have questions for the panelist moderators, or you have something to add, let's get a conversation about how we're going to dream this up, how we're going to make impactful change right now in our industry.
You know, it's funny, I'm listening to Brian Kramer channel his inner Jocko Willink, and I could just see why he's got guys like Josh working in his store. It must be a fucking inspiration every day you guys walk through those doors to be able to go and change the paradigm as to how we work. And as much as we talk about dreaming of the future and the tech, I love what you were saying, Brian, about you got to set that comes last. It really is about the people and the processes, and build the tech around that and identifying the purpose. And then what's so huge, and what I heard you say, and you hear it reflected in Josh, is that you've empowered them to make those decisions and trust them to do it, and you're guiding them. It's extreme leadership, and you see it in practice in our business. I love it, man.
Hey guys, this is Louis Heron, and I appreciate to be being on the stage. A couple of things have come to mind with what's, you know, the automotive space is one of the most unique atmospheres on the planet, right? Because you can give the car business everything you got and it still wants more. And so I think when I think about this conversation about creating the future, to me, and it sounds like I'm dumbing it down, but really goes back to training and more specifically training the sales guys to be managers, training the sales managers to think like a general sales manager, the GSM to think like a GM in advance. In other words, empower them to make some culture changes, because I think having the courage to do that is, and really encourage in general, is just the willingness to let go of the familiar. In our business, we are so scared to let go of the familiar, how we desk deals, how we work customers, how, like, to get outside the box. We're like, oh man, what about our gross margins? What are, you know, I look back at, I was in Atlanta 2005 and six and launched a 60 minute delivery from handshake to tail, like 60 minute delivery. And everybody's like, man, how in the world are you going to do that? And quite honestly, I said, I don't have the answer. I'm just going to figure it out. And really the marketing piece was huge, because people's time and efficiencies, and I believed in it, and I could sell it, and we got stopwatches, and we figured out a way to execute this. But it wasn't necessarily by me as the general manager at that time. It was about getting my sales managers and my F&I guys to be on the same page, and like, hey guys, I don't want to hear about it. How are you going to get them out? It's going to cost you money, because it's not about you. It's about us. It's about the team. It's about the customer. And it's about if we can facilitate all of those things simultaneously, we all win. The problem is so many of car people, all of us, to a certain extent, we're self-oriented. And the leaders, as we go and grow and get bigger in the industry, and we start acquiring more, doing more, we start to realize that that's not the right approach. But as these guys are coming up, I think those are the things we've got to break of them, and then also let them know that, just to have the courage to let that familiar go, because life will expand and shrink in proportion, direct proportion to the courage our people have. So I think, you know, to me, I think training is the key. I think, you know, training your guys, the and gals, the ones that you know that have a desire to grow, to figure out, okay, I got this guy, I got this girl, I got this guy and this girl, all of them want to go to the next level. Now you got to pour into them, because those are going to be the ones that's going to create some change and help facilitate the exact future that we're all looking for, because the future really is about the unknown. What can we do differently that's a unique selling proposition that will wow the community, the customer, and even our own employees, when we all look back and go, how the hell did we get that done? That's the power. And that's really what we're all looking for.
Hey, Lou, just quickly, I love what you had to say about letting go of the familiar. And I think it, you know, dovetails a little bit with what I was trying to say about the letting the people inside the dealership be the process, especially the digital savvy mindset that's inside the dealership. Yeah, I think the people are still the hero. They're a huge point of differentiation for our dealers. The software is just the platform around it. So agree with what you said.
I completely agree with that, Doug.
Yeah, I had similar thoughts on my mind when I popped onto the stage here, Louis, and because I really am a huge believer that we need to be thinking about our leaders in the industry if we want to be awesome, if we want this industry to grow, if we want to be innovative, then we need to think about what specific skills do we need our leaders to have. If you're running a dealership, if you're leading a dealer group, what are those skills, and how are those skills changing, and how are we making sure that our leaders are up to speed with the things that they need to handle? So for instance, one of the things that I think is crucial right now is change management. And it sounds so boring. Who wants to talk about or think about change management? But, you know, all of these Clubhouse chats that we've been having this week, we're talking about change and how we handle change and how we ensure it's effective. How do we get buy-in across the dealership, across our organizations? So, you know, we need to learn the skills of change management and these what we call soft skills. I like to say soft skills have a branding problem. We call them soft. They don't sound important, but they're critical for our future success. I think the other thing that is really important when we're thinking about the future is the barriers to innovation. We've got some critical infrastructure barriers in our industry, things that get in the way of software companies innovating, that get in the way of dealers innovating, difficulty getting access to the data that we need and connecting it up the way we want in our dealerships. So that's another theme that I think is important for us to explore as an industry and work together to break down those barriers.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and the innovation and the insights that happened on Clubhouse. As always, please like, share, comment, give this to those in your workplaces or friends or family that may be encouraged by it. And what we need from you is for you to be a part of this conversation, to have this conversation with more people and not less. We need more voices and not less in our industry pushing forward toward innovation, and that includes you. So as you go forward, as you listen to this, as you think about this, make sure you don't have just internal dialogue. Have conversations with more people so that we can provide an innovative atmosphere where more people want to become a part of it and work in the industry as well as do business with us. Thanks for listening to Contagious Podcast.